Welcome to City Club of Eugene's February 8th program, Past Presidents Speak. City Club of Eugene, Past, Present, and Future. I'm Joel Corin, President of City Club. Jerry Gatos and I coordinated this program. Support for City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You can become a member of City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. We have both a business and in-kind sponsors. Our diamond sponsors are Kaiser Permanente. Kaiser Permanente exists to provide high-quality, affordable health care services and to improve the health of our members and the communities we serve. More information at www.kp.org. The University of Oregon. Since 1876, UO has helped Oregonians question critically, think logically, reason effectively, communicate clearly, act creatively, and live ethically. More information at uoregon.edu. And a new diamond sponsor, Peace Health. At Peace Health, our mission is our shared purpose since we were founded more than 125 years ago, to promote personal and community wellness, to relieve pain and suffering, to treat each person in a loving and caring way. For more, visit peacehealth.org. And our Sapphire sponsor, Johnson Johnson Lucas in Middleton, the offices of Johnson Johnson Lucas in Middleton's mission is to provide, to obtain justice and fair compensation for people who have been harmed because of someone's wrongful conduct. More information at justicelawyers.com. Today's program, Past Presidents Speak, is an idea that we've had, and I found out today that the last time we had a program featuring past presidents was approximately 10 years ago, and maybe once a decade is enough. So we're going to get started. I'm going to read the list of past presidents. If you are a past president and you're in the room, please rise so that you can be recognized and save your applause till the end. 1990 to 92, Jerry Gatos. 1992 and 93, Gretchen Miller. 1993 and 94, Bill Shepard. 1994 and 95, Jim Forbes. 1995 and 96, Don Corson. 1996 to 97, Liz Kaywood. 1997-98, Alan Zelenka. 98 to 99, Susan Bann. 99 to 2000, Kathy Madison. 2000-2001, Dave Pompel. There's Dave. 2001-2002, Don Kelly. 2002-2003, Dan Bryant in the back. 2003-2004, Carolyn Kranzler. 2004 and 5, Adele McMillan, who I understand is deceased. 2005 and 6, Tom Leininger. 2006 and 7, Rick Dancer. 2007 and 8, Pat Skipper. 2008 and 9, Carmen Urbina. 2009 and 10, Jerry Detelm. 2010 and 11, Rick Gates. 2011 and 12, Mary Layton. 12 to 14, Marty Wilde. 2014-15, Marlene Nessery. 2015-16, James Baldock, who moved to Boston. 2016-17, Juan Carlos Valle. 2017-18, Sandra Bishop, and you know about me. The format for today is we're going to have the speakers come up and talk for approximately 5 minutes about their year and what they would like to see in the future. And then there will be the break for questions, and then we will take questions. Hopefully your questions will be addressed to one person and not the whole group, so we don't have me too. One of the things I wanted to do was to have a discussion about the founding of City Club. And Jerry Gatos, the first president, was scheduled to be here today to present the founding of the City Club, but had to unfortunately had to cancel. But in his place, we have obtained the services of Gene Tate to talk about the founding of City Club. Gene is well known around town as a philanthropist, a founder, and her work for City Club has continued. She is a resource for us and a consultant for us in how to fundraise, and she's been a great help to Paul and myself in that operation. Gene?
Thank you very much. My friends will not realize that I play a very unique instrument. It's called the second fiddle. Jerry is really sorry he can't be here today because he was the founding member along with Russell Sadler. How many of you in the audience remember Russell Sadler? Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Well, Russell was quite a character. One of his favorite lines was that he made his home in a Volkswagen Bug traveling between Portland and Eugene. He is in Washington State now, and I wish he could have been here because you would have enjoyed him. We might have had trouble keeping him to the 5 minutes, but he would have enjoyed it. This started when Jerry Gatos and Russell Sadler were having coffee or lunch together and talked about the fact that we did not have a place where people with differing views could argue in a good manner. And they were kind of on opposite sides of the fence politically at that time. And out of that came the germ of this idea to have a group get together to talk about this. There are two people in the room that I know are on that first group, Hugh Pritchard and Liz Kaywood. Is there anyone else besides the three of us who was in that first group? Gretchen Pierce was there, and Gretchen Miller both. Anyway, we had a lot of fun meetings, and our first meeting was scheduled at the Hilton Hotel. And when I arrived early, which I thought I should, I saw that it was only set up for 100 people. I said, who thought we were only going to have 100 people? And Russell said, I did. And that was our first battle because we ended up with 200 people, and we had a lot of people coming for lunch who had to sit here. And what I did was confiscate the cookies from all the tables and give them to the people who had come and were missing lunch. The enthusiasm of this group was contagious. When we had good programs, we had a lot of people. When we didn't have good programs, we didn't have quite as many. I wrote my speech out here on this little note. at the end of the first year, we decided to have a function. And we decided that there were people in Eugene who were not recognized for the work that they did behind the scenes. And so we would have a turtle award that was for someone who was willing to stick their neck out for the community. Our first recipient, as you all know, was John Van Landingham. What I remember, and what neither Hugh nor Liz remembers, and so maybe it was a pipe dream, we had a choral group that sang this song patterned after the Capitol steps, making fun of the various factions in Eugene. And was anybody at that first meeting? Remember who that group was? Do you remember it, Bill? But you remember the group. Okay, good. I have not lost my mind. My final comment will be that I'm a little disappointed that we've been unable to keep up the lively discussion. Oh, yes, one other thing I wanted to mention. Liz, you came up with the idea of play. Yeah, where varied minds come out to play. And if I've got that wrong, you can fix it. But it was a wonderful thing, and it should have been the guiding force for us. And my concern is that so many of us in the room, even though I'm a registered Republican, haven't voted for Republican for president since Dwight Eisenhower, but we need a two-party system, and I do wish for City Club that we could do something to have more conservatives in our audience. Thank you very much for your attention.
We would like to have that too. Our next speaker is Liz Kaywood from 9697. She is involved in many different good causes around town. She was the Chamber of Commerce's Business Person of the Year, and she comes out every Friday morning at 7:30 for the Chamber's LGAC committee, and we look at each other over coffee. Liz?
Well, things have changed. Obviously, we're not meeting at the Hilton anymore. I think this is a better venue. So building community vision through open inquiry, that's the mission of City Club, and it has been since the beginning. It speaks, as Jean talked about, to a place where everyone is welcome. We can all explore various opinions and options and seek a vision that really strengthens our community. It was a good idea in 1990, and it's still a good idea. We made several early on decisions, I think, that were especially important. There was some sentiment that City Club should become a part of the Eugene Chamber when we were first starting. Myself and others opposed that because we really felt like we needed a place for people to come together without thinking they were in a business environment or they were in any other environment. It was just a place to come and talk about the issues that affect us all. And I'm glad that City Club was and continues to be an independent group. The second thing we did was to work really hard to identify people and ask them to be presidents who represented the various segments of the community so that we really were very inclusive at a time when inclusive wasn't necessarily a word that we used very much. Our firm worked on a pro bono basis to develop the City Club's logo and the tagline that Jean mentioned to you, where minds come out to play. And it may have been that I thought of it because I love it. I think we often take ourselves too seriously, and we really do need to engage with people who have differing opinions than we have, to listen to their perspectives, to be open to new thinking, and let a dialogue develop that may not be what we thought it might be at all. And so those engaged and playful minds, I think that's really at the heart of City Club. And I think sometimes we've lost track of that at times, but I hope in the future we continue to do that. And so as I think about a shared vision, one of the things that I would suggest to you that is a huge problem in our community right now that we could focus our thinking on is housing. And I know that there have been a lot of housing programs here, but you all know, I think, that housing is not affordable for many people. And I'm always astounded at the statistics, and I don't think sometimes we can hear those enough, because the reality is you have to hear things again and again and again until they really seep in. But nearly half, think about that, half of all local residents are cost burden. That means they can barely pay for their housing and their basic costs of living. And according to United Way, which produces a report called the Alice Report, 42% of households in Eugene are struggling to meet those needs. That includes 18% who are in poverty. So of that 42%, 18% are in poverty. The others are earning more than the federal poverty level, but they don't have enough money to make ends meet. I think a more telling statistic, and one that was shocking to me, is that the average local family spends 60% of their money on housing and transportation. And part of that is because when it's expensive to live in a community, people have to go find housing elsewhere. And when they go somewhere else, their transportation costs go up. And that is a reality for many people and has forced that statistic. Now at the same time, I would imagine that everybody in the room would agree that we want to live within our urban growth boundary. And we want to protect Oregon's farms, forests, and natural resources. And since we passed SB 100 in 1973, we've done just that, and we've done a pretty good job. Yet today, throughout the state, there are pressures to expand UGBs. And one of the main reasons is that people don't want their single-family neighborhoods to change. They want things to stay the same. And people are afraid of change. It's pretty common. We all know this to be true. I was trying to find a specific piece of information that I couldn't find, but I discovered some more recent research that really surprised me. What it says is single-family neighborhoods are really enclaves. Those enclaves are composed of, as I look around the room, to people who look like us. They're white, and the studies call them rich. What that means is they can afford to buy a house. Doesn't make you rich necessarily, or for many of us, also as I look around the room, we probably bought our houses in the 70s or 80s. We got a heck of a good deal back then, and prices have changed dramatically. So it's really important, I think, that we focus on how do we make our neighborhoods more affordable? Are we okay with a community whose policies segregate us from one another, that doesn't bring us together? And what about a community that denies people the opportunity to live in a walkable neighborhood, to be able to get where they want to go without having to drive and pay those high transportation costs? And I think if we're really honest, some of us have been in the situation where we say, I really believe in density, it's a good thing, I'm glad Eugene has that policy, but when it's gonna move next door to us, we're like, that's not the right location. Needs to go somewhere else. So we really have to pay attention, I think. And it's important because if we don't build more densely, we have to expand the urban growth boundary. These people have to live somewhere. We have to help them with that. Oregon's population, since we passed SB 100, has gone from 2 million to just over 4 million. It's doubled. I tried to find out how much land outside the UGB had changed in that time period. I wasn't able to find that statistic, but I did find a statistic that says right now we have 800,000 acres in our urban growth boundaries between the cities and the towns that have them. And then when we look at this, we have 61.3 million acres that are outside the UGB. So unfortunately, we can't keep our sprawling neighborhoods and protect our farms, forests, and natural areas, so we have to have a discussion. What are we going to do? What is more important? And I hope that in the future, that's this discussion that happens here at City Club, because I believe we are a force to build community vision through open inquiry. Let's start that discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, very thoughtful. Every Friday, when the Register Guard comes, you open up to the opinion page, and there's Don Kelly. Thoughtful articles, and then on the fifth Friday, it gets a little weird, but it's always interesting, it's always fun. Don, come on up.
Thank you, Joel, for the invitation. I'll start by repeating what I've been saying for 20 years. I don't know if Eugene does City Club better than other places, but Eugene needs a City Club more than other places. My tenure began in 2001, which explains why I can't remember much. Most of the ideas I had back then have turned 18 and moved out. I hope they're being productive somewhere, wherever they are. I'm learning to just be grateful when they occasionally visit. To help my memory, I wrote down five changes that we made at City Club when I was yapping into this microphone. I'm also going to name some of my co-conspirators. First thing we did, we doubled our meeting frequency, and then we doubled it again. We used to meet every second and fourth Friday of each month. We started meeting every Friday, and KLCC graciously agreed to broadcast us every week. We understood City Club, for most people, happens on Monday nights during dinner time. So we added Tuesday morning follow-up meetings at a coffee house, Cafe Paradiso. Radio listeners got something new from City Club, a call to action. Come downtown tomorrow and join the conversation. We went from meeting twice a month to meeting twice a week, thanks to Jenny Knutson and Greg Fleener. We wanted City Club to be accessible to as many people as possible, so we looked for ways to lower the barriers. Not everyone can get away for 90 minutes at lunchtime, but very few of us have standing commitments at 7:30 in the morning on Tuesdays. We added gallery seating so that people who could attend that without having to pay for a lunch. Thanks, Linda Norris and Julie Daniel. We had extra people coming to extra meetings, so we dreamed up a clever way to recruit volunteers. We raised our annual dues from $60 to $110, but we created a new membership category. Do some volunteer work for the club and get a 50% discount. One-third of our members paid the higher price, and for the rest, we found them new ways to be involved. Do you remember Kathy Madison? We were on a train trip, and she and Sue Ofert dreamed that one up. Finally, we made two significant changes to the programs themselves. We invited and promoted a first questioner for most programs. It gave our presentations a better balance and included a wider range of voices. We gave our invited guests a colorful name tag, a memento City Club glass, and a free trial membership. Thanks to Dan Bryant and Dale Highland. I believe questions are the most important part of any City Club program, and so we tried something really new. We gave every table 4 minutes to craft and agree on a question to be posed by their group. I brought a stopwatch, this one, and people were amazed at what they could accomplish together in 240 seconds. Thanks to Sally Weston and Richie Weinman. So there you have it. We doubled our Friday forums plus Tuesday morning roundtables, gallery seating for those who couldn't or wouldn't buy lunch, volunteer membership to get more people involved in more ways, first questioners to bring more voices into the conversation, 4 minutes of table talk to collectively form our questions. 18 years later, I think questions are even more important than they were then. If you read my column in the newspaper this morning, you know why I'm wearing black today. On Monday, 369 years, Rene Descartes is really, really dead. We kept him alive, city clubs, universities, public radio, newspapers. We kept him alive by following his system of thought. But the age of reason is closing now, to be replaced by who knows what. But it's not who knows what. That's the problem. It's who cares about what. It's who's curious about what. 18 years ago, the room was run by the person with the best answers, as it had been for the last 3.5 centuries. Control has now shifted to those who ask the best questions. We all have supercomputers in our pockets, entire libraries of knowledge. How do we literally tap into that knowledge? By asking good questions. So please, 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 City Clubbers, practice asking questions. Get good at it. Show others the way forward. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Pat Skipper. Pat was president. Dan? Dan Bryant. Okay. We'll get to everybody. Dan, everybody knows Dan. Dan is an embodiment of the idea of feeding the sick, feeding the poor, clothing the sick, and putting people in houses. He has been a stalwart for City Club. When I first joined the program committee, he was chair, and that was a few years ago. And he comes every Friday and records us on television. A constant presence and a constant reminder. Dan?
Thank you, Joel. So as soon as I walked in the room, Don's first words to me was, oh, you get to clean up after me once again. And that was the greatest delight of being the president, was that I got to follow Don and working together with Don on the board for a couple of years. Was just a delightful experience because he has such a creative way of thinking. And I know Don didn't just bring audio visuals, he brought auditory devices to share with the club, very mindful of our radio audience. I just love that kind of creative thinking. One of his other creative thinkings that I benefited from was the City Club Gala. I can't believe you didn't mention it, Don.
Oh, yeah, I only had five.
Yeah, there you go. The City Club Gala was this evening event, and we only did two of them, as I recall. Three? The first one was with David Broder. Alexander
Coburn.
Oh, I forgot Coburn. Yes, thank you. Good you're here. So two columnists, Alex Coburn, and then David Broder. Of course, Broder was a columnist for the Washington Post. How did we get David Broder? Turns out he was a good friend with Mary McCauley Burroughs, a former legislator, and she invited him, and he graciously agreed. And then the year after that, Tom Maine, the architect for the federal building. And I think that's what did it in, because it was a wonderful event. We all came thinking we were going to hear this wonderful presentation about how to build a big building. Instead, we got this lesson of the history of civilization that just was absolutely amazing. And we were all kind of scratching our heads. Now, how did that relate to architecture once again? But it did. It was just incredible. So those were great years, fun celebrations that we have. I want to focus, and I so appreciate the history that Jean and Liz gave to us, because the mission of the City Club, of building community vision through open inquiry. One of the last things I did when I was president was I gave a State of the City Club address. And Pat reminded me of it because she found it on her computer, still had a copy of it, the Once and Future City Club. It wasn't just what we were doing locally. We are actually part of a national movement of city clubs across the country. And one of the things that was funny was right after I became president, the Register Guard ran an article 3 weeks after I became president that was titled, "The Decline of City Clubs." Welcome very much. But they were talking about a different type of city club, a city club that's just a social thing, kind of a country club in the city. Our city club is very different. We're part of a rich tradition that began in New York in the 1890s. The City Club of Cleveland, I'm not even sure if that's the name of it, is the most famous. San Francisco, several communities have them. Let me just share with you their tagline, Tacoma, Inquiring Minds Embracing the Future. Cleveland, a free exchange of thought. Portland, the conscience of the city. Denver, to inform rather than to reform. San Diego, dialogue of democracy. I love that one. And then Eugene, as Liz pointed out, where minds come out to play. But I love that because of the curiosity that Don spoke of the importance of that kind of creative thinking, of having that place where we do that, and where we seek to build not just community. Community is vitally important, but community vision. And I want to just think about the importance of that. Vision is about describing a destination, not about creating a roadmap. And if you think about what we seek to do in terms of describing a destination of the type of community we seek to be, of using those inquiring minds to build a vision for a community, I think is a very important function of this club that I don't know of anyone else that does it as well as what we do here. It is so incredibly important. So a couple of things that we did, and I don't remember the dates of all of these things. Some of these were under Don's leadership. But of course, 2001, September 11th, in October of 2001, we held a community-wide dialogue on Islam and the importance of understanding Islam. It was four series and bringing people together for conversation. What is Islam? You know, are they really out to kill us? You know, those kinds of things, and debunking some of the myths. It was an incredibly important conversation in this community at a critical time. We did that. I'm very proud of that event of 2001. We did study circles on racism, where we had small groups and used a curriculum in dialoguing about racism. Think of how important that would be right now in today's context. Still a critical issue. And then we did another one. We partnered with the Register Guard on mental illness and did another four-week series on mental illness and understanding the impact of that, not just on individuals, but on community. So just incredible conversations. We had adopted from Portland City Club, I think, this tradition of issuing ballot measure guides. Remember those? Some of those, you've worked on those, where we I think a lot of that was working with the League of Women Voters and educating our members on ballot measures, and we took positions on those ballot measures in the early years. And that created a lot of controversy. And at that time, we just felt it was important to speak to our community. We shifted away from that in 2001, 2002, and decided that we needed to raise the issues and trust the viewers and the listeners to come to their own conclusion, that was more of our role rather than taking a position. But still an incredibly important thing that we have continued in various ways to this day of having those events on ballot measures to raise awareness. One of the other things I'm very proud of is John Attic here presented a proposal to the board of this crazy idea of creating a monument to the laureates of the Nobel Peace Prize, first ever in the nation. You know, we have all these monuments to war heroes. Where are the monuments to the winners of the Peace Prize? And City Club was the first, I think, John, was it not, the first organization in the city to endorse that concept. And now it is a beautiful addition to Alton Baker Park. If you've not been there, go check it out. We helped to make that happen. So many other things, I think, that are just a very incredible thing that we have done as we continue this tradition. And I just laud the City Club for all the work that you continue to do. And I am proud to still be a part of it to help share the message of building community vision through open inquiry. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
Good evening. You're listening to City Club of Eugene on KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, KLFR Reedsport 89.1, and at 88.1 KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, and KLBR Bend. KLCC is a service of Lane Community College. You can find all City Club of Eugene programs on our website, klcc.org.
Now, we have Pat Skipper. Yeah, I think you were before. It doesn't matter, folks. It doesn't matter. We're going to get everybody in. So let's go with Pat. Pat has been president of City Club. She's been head of the program committee. She served as interim director twice to help fill in when we needed her. She conducted a strategic planning committee for the board a couple years ago, and she's going to give us the benefit of her wisdom in addition to everybody else. Pat?
Oh, thank you, Joel. And yes, when people ask for the benefit of my opinion, sometimes it doesn't turn out so well. I want to thank Dan for bringing up the last spring gala, of which I believe I was the chair of that committee. That ranks among my memories most mercifully dim, but and I did not include it in my talk. And thank you, Jerry, and to Jerry Gatos Joel and Jerry Gatos for putting this together. The City Club was changing in the years before my term as president in 2007. As a community, organizations here began to see the need to transition from a nonprofit organization to a not-for-profit corporation. The City Club board went through a strategic planning process in 2005. Our intention was to look forward to the growth and vitality of the club in its second decade and beyond, and envision the club as reflecting more of our changing community. Including, and thank you for pointing that out, Liz, more conservatives and people from the business community. The plan directed encouraging program topics to attract new audiences, including different venues, outreach to targeted groups, and marketing. We moved the office to a storefront presence, created a new membership database, conducted a member survey, and produced an annual report of the City Club. We tried many new things, including expanding the program committee, moved the Friday Forum to the DAC, and we learned some things. Although change is inevitable to everything, I look back to share more about what I thought we should keep rather than what needs to be changed. The concept of the open forum where ideas and opinions can be shared freely is the club's mission. Members ask informed, insightful, and sometimes irrelevant questions in order to start a conversation. Program topics are not always hot button issues, but they are of interest, can inform, educate, and add to our collective culture, and hopefully presented by well-informed individuals and occasionally result in real action. As president, my intention for the year was to introduce more programming about the arts and not-for-profit organizations. We invited them to come, asked them to specifically talk about why they exist and what they do to make a difference in the community. However, a number of those organizations used their time at the club to advocate for their cause, ask for financial support, recruit volunteers, and promote their own events. It's a disappointment, but I still welcome these groups to come to the table and within the conventions of our public forum. And thank you for bringing a glass, Dawn. That was like a major recognition for people who did come to the City Club. There's hundreds of them out there, I think. And as a City Club president and a program committee member, I thought that extending the privilege of an invitation to speak to the club was special, and I hope that belief continues. What I did, a part of my talk, I had printed the City Club's mission and purpose. As I convened most Friday forums that year by reading the mission and one of the purposes of the club, as much as a reminder to myself that my first duty as president was to defend against mission drift and always view the club's activities through the lens of why it was founded and why we are here. As I said, change will happen. So this wasn't always easy, could be frustrating, and sometimes fell short. But my advice to the future is to always keep the mission and purpose as a key factor when making those inevitable changes. I was a regular listener of the KLCC broadcast for many years before I actually joined, like others who could not attend the Friday noon program. KLCC has had a special relationship with the City Club and a role in the club's history, and personally, I want to thank them. And more personally, Don Hine, their program director, for coaching my radio voice and giving me the skills to produce a quality program for broadcast. In terms of the future, back in the day, I especially wanted to take advantage of technology as much as we were able, given our resources. Video recording of meetings, thanks to Dan Bryant, was just the beginning. We tried live streaming, and now with video on community TV, YouTube, the Friday forums are more accessible than ever. I recently did some research on social media and other online platforms and learned how much they've changed in the last 30 years. I'm trying to remember, anybody remember CompuServe? You know, future applications will be very different from what we use now, but they will offer a great opportunity for the club to reach out worldwide and not only offer programs presented by and for our members, but to give the world a showcase about Eugene's collective culture and about the City Club. There are not-for-profit corporations that do not change, grow, and thrive. And I want to thank and salute a dynamic and vibrant City Club with thanks to the past and future members and past and future presidents, and more importantly, to you, the members. Thank you very much. Thank you, Jeff.
Jerry Detelm was president 2009-2010. He is a consistent attendee, asks interesting and sometimes challenging questions, and continues to be a sponsor of City Club. Jerry?
Thank you, Joel. As Joel said, I'm Jerry Detelm. I was president from 2009 to 2010. And from 1970 to 2005, I taught planning and design classes at our College of Architecture, University of Oregon's College of Architecture. It was then called the School of Architecture and Allied Arts. In 2001, Don Cayley invited me to come and talk about the Emerald Waterways system. And so I came and I talked about restoring a mill race and bringing the water through an 11-block Emerald Canal, connecting it to Amazon Creek and taking it all the way out to Fern Ridge and dumping it back into the Long Tom River and creating a kind of park and open space structure for our city. And of course, I've talked about and worked on it for, 40 years now. And some of it has happened. When I finished, I was given a one-year free membership to City Club, which I thought was a wonderful idea, because I came and I liked the people and I liked what was going on here, and so I've now stayed for the past additional 18 years. When I was president of the club, I also became a sponsor and have been a sponsor since then too, because I think this is actually one of the wonderful organizations that Eugene has. Now I'm going to talk about two events that stand out from my years as program committee chair to illustrate some observations and advice I have about our programs. In 2009, we were meeting at the Hilton on the top floor that looks out over the city, which I thought was a great room. And sometimes we'd meet downstairs when we had larger meetings in the conference rooms when we expected a larger crowd. And the Friday I'm going to talk about first, we were downstairs, and I was getting ready to introduce the then president, UO president, Richard LaRiviere. I was trying to get to him to set up a playful exchange I'd planned when I got buttonholed by a group that forcibly demanded an explanation of why the City Club had turned down their program to discuss their opposition to siting the Oregon Research Institute on the University Riverfront. I remember how completely dissatisfied they were when I explained that our program committee hadn't approved the program because the university had refused to participate, and I, as program chair and a City Club president, didn't make those decisions unilaterally. We talked about those things as a group. So they went away, and we went on with our program and my scheme to add in some playful interest. And when LaRiviere was finished, I asked the president the first question that we had set up ahead of time. I said, didn't he agree that the metaphor of the U of O as a flagship university had gotten a bit worn out and threadbare? And if he could go to the metaphor store, what might he shop for to replace it? You see, I knew he was a Sanskrit scholar, and I thought I was setting him up. I didn't tell him what to say. I thought I was setting him up for something less militaristic, such as the jewel in the crown or something like that, you know. But he came back with, he said, if I could go to the metaphor store, and he could see he loved the idea. If I could go to the metaphor store, he said, I'd look everything over very carefully and then walk out the door wearing the same exact suit I'd come in with. Now, I'm using this example because it points out two of the three main types of typical City Club program presentations. The first type is inviting leaders of the community to come to speak to us and answer our questions, which I think is a really important role of City Club. And the second is providing a forum, as people have mentioned, for topically ripe and unresolved issues, such as the Oregon Research Institute and the riverfront matter. In retrospect, I think we were remiss in not finding a way to underwrite that discussion about the riverfront. I think we shouldn't have allowed one side of an issue to stonewall the possibility of a valuable discussion. And I wish we'd figured out a little bit better way to bring that to bear. Because as you know, over the past 10 years, the 10 years that followed that, we had a lot of things to do to decide about our riverfront. And I think that would have been helpful. The third type is what came to be known in our program committee. I think maybe Pat Skipper came up with this. We call them dog and pony shows. And these are the showcase programs. They're often very good programs and important programs that usually end up with empty questions from City Club members like, gee, how wonderful. How can we help you? Where do I send the check? You know, but not lively discussions. And while I think it's important to do a number of these each year, it's a community service to bring people's attention to some of the things going on in the city. I do think we actually live up to our principal purposes best when we emphasize types one and type two. Now, I was responsible for promoting the opera while I was City Club president because I love to have those big voices in our rooms just knocking us off our chairs. And I don't regret that. But I think type 1 and type 2 is really kind of where our mission really rests. And if there's a fourth type, it would probably fall under the heading of special or other, like our gifts to the city programs. So I want to close with my very favorite gift from one of our gifts to the city programs because of its sage advice. We were at the DAC, and Dan Williams, the former U of O vice president, was almost last after 14 or we had a number of gifts that year. We didn't just stop with 10 like this. We had, maybe it was 18. And Dan Bryant was our wonderful MC, as usual, who tied all of these things together. Then Dan got up and he said how genuinely impressed he was with all the imaginative and thoughtful presentations that he'd heard. But he said, I'm standing here now feeling a bit like Zsa Zsa Gabor's ninth husband on their wedding night. I know what's expected of me, just not how to make it interesting. Continuing week in and week out to provide programs that meet and exceed expectations is the City Club's great gift to the city. And as a longtime lover of what works best in education, I know how important it is to keep it interesting. Thank you.
I don't know about you, but I'm learning an awful lot. Now, the next speaker was president, and just about last week, I've forgiven her for asking me to become secretary for 2.5 years of taking minutes. But Marlene is somebody who thought outside the box. And some of the things that she wanted to do, like a statewide consortium of city clubs, has taken place and is now active and vibrant among city clubs. And maybe she'll tell you about some of the other outside-the-box ideas that she had. Marlene?
Thank you, Joel. Hello, everyone. I'm Marlene Nesri, City Club President, 2014-2015. Thank you for inviting my perspective and for placing it in historical context. That means a lot to me. I'm honored to be here with you. This organization first crossed my radar not long after I moved here in 2000. The education nonprofit where I went to work focused mostly on national and international markets, but retained a local PR agent who referred to the City Club of Eugene as the South Hills Democratic Club. Over the next decade, I heard this descriptor from many people, especially those affiliated with the local Chamber of Commerce, which might, in a similar vein, be referred to as the downtown Republican base. Maybe you can guess that party politics aren't really my favorite, but I've loved debate since high school. I can still see the team bus lost in a snowstorm somewhere around Cottonwood, Idaho, partners anxiously rehearsing arguments about the Taft-Hartley Act for regionals. Good times, good times. Over the decades since, I've participated in numerous issue campaigns and strived, in the words of Oregon's Senator Wayne Morse, who switched parties twice to prove it, to put principle and the public interest above partisanship. My Eugene employer opened a Washington, D.C. headquarters office in the early 2000s, and I loved that. I traveled regularly for Hill visits and meetings, even managed to attend President Obama's first State of the Union address, one of the 10 best experiences of my life. Then in 2012, I found myself suddenly unemployed, over 60, and in a lousy job market that I really knew very little about. So I joined a networking group at the Chamber and the City Club's program committee. City Club proved very engrossing to me. The rapid-fire deadlines, the search for balance in combining speakers and topics, the shared leadership. As a former journalist, I was blown away to realize that City Club of Eugene produced 50 plus hours a year of original public affairs programming on a shoestring budget with volunteer labor. Who else does that? Nobody. City Club of Eugene offers a masterclass in democracy. My instinct when I became president was to broaden City Club's image from the South Hills Democratic Club to something less partisan, more diverse, and more worldly. I knew that Justice Sandra Day O'Connor had founded an education nonprofit focused on civic engagement. And from a former student in Missoula, I learned that Justice O'Connor loved fly fishing. So we pitched her a combined McKinsey River excursion and City Club event, and she took the bait. We began regular planning meetings with a broad array of stakeholders from the law school and judiciary to state and local K-12, government officials, and other Oregon-based city clubs. We were days away from signing a contract with the Hult Center when Justice O'Connor, who had just turned 80, canceled her visit for health reasons. That was a huge disappointment. But we scrambled to develop an alternative, working with local high schools to stage a City Club debate around three civic education bills, then before the Oregon legislature. We asked Justice O'Connor for a video, and she sent us a gracious 7-minute greeting, which we aired at the May 1st forum. We did not succeed in fulfilling the Hult Center with a keynote by the Honorable Sandra Day O'Connor, founder of iCivics and the first female justice of the United States Supreme Court. But perhaps the year-long effort to do so planted a few seeds. As an avid gardener, I'm glad about that. I'll close with a comparison and a proposal. In 2014, we still had a decent forum for local voices in our daily paper. Today, that forum has largely disappeared. We've seen a similar shift to outside ownership and non-local editorial control in our TV stations over the last 5 years. At the national level, bullies have grabbed the bully pulpit, and reasoned debate has become an exception rather than the norm. City Club of Eugene, it seems to me, is more essential than ever to our community and its future. Please help preserve it, perhaps by directing some of the dollars and time you've been spending on our minimally local news channels into support for the City Club of Eugene. It truly is a masterclass in democracy. Thank you very much.
You can't imagine how I felt when I saw the letter from Sandra Day O'Connor saying, I'll be there. And then the other letter saying, no, I won't. We're not going to have time for questions, and I'm going to have to sort of abbreviate my remarks, much to the satisfaction of all of you. One of the recurring themes of what you heard today is we need more people who are conservative, more people who are involved in business, more people who have different ideas than the South Hills Democratic Club. And about 2 years ago, we started working on that, the genius idea of Paul Thompson. When he gifted the City Club with a membership in the Chamber of Commerce, and he and I would go every Friday morning to the local government affairs council. It was an eye-opening experience for us. People of great intelligence, great caring and compassion for the city of Eugene. And Paul and I started to build up relationships with people like Liz and people, a representative of the university. And this job, in some ways, is much dependent on the contacts and the personal relationships that we have with people. and we have been able to build those and get more people interested in City Club, get some younger people interested in City Club. The past presidents can talk about the lofty ideas that they've learned from the year. When I took over, I was much more involved in the nitty-gritty of running the club. The club doesn't exist if we don't have the finances for it. So we got involved in, first, it was plan your work, then work your plan. We had a strategic planning committee meeting that was hosted by Marilyn Milne, who led us at the end of the night to have measurable goals, achievable goals, in fundraising, in membership, and in outreach. And we've been able to accomplish all of those goals in half the time. And we now have to raise the bar. Marilyn objects to the title Chief Nagging Officer, but she's been back to remind us of our goals and remind us of what we have to do. The basis of this club, what succeeds or what makes us succeed, is the programming. And I'm very proud of the programming we've had, starting off with in September with the downtown safety, with the debates on the elections, with January's blockbuster month, with the Chief Justice, the current and former governor, and the president of the university. Not a bad month. So, and what's happening too is that in addition to us calling and nagging people to come, some of the people, like the governor, some of the people like Senator Wyden, have reached out to us, partially through Silver's contacts with people on their staff. That's what we want to continue. Our programming has to remain at a high level for us to succeed, as does our fundraising. In the future, I don't think we need to change much. We need to go forward and put our programming out on additional platforms. We're going to pay for them with sponsorships, memberships, and donations. We're not going to pay for them with the number of Yum Bowls sold. So for the future, I think we have to continue with the type of programming that Jerry talked about, having the leaders come and be questioned, having topical debates where we can present, I hate the Fox News logo, but we present, you decide. That's what we want to do. I'm very proud to be president of City Club. You've only got me for 3 more months, but I promise you that I will continue afterward in efforts to continue the quality programming and increase the fundraising. Before we close, I'd like to thank our gold sponsors, Gatos Churnside and Balthrop, Dr. Sandy Ibarra, Hearing Associates, Banner Bank, Jerry Detel, Landscape Architect and Architect, KVRM 91.9, Dot Dotson Photography, PAC Info, and KLCC, and local Channel 29. There is no program next week so that you can go away for the weekend for President's Day. On the 22nd, our program, Inmate to Neighbor, Finding the Way Home. Very interesting program. Also, if you missed Governor Brown's address, we're not able to attend Governor Brown, the repeat of Governor Brown, the radio programming on KLCC will broadcast Governor Brown's January 22nd event on Monday the 18th, that's President's Day itself, at 6:30. I want to thank all the presidents for coming back. I appreciate it, and we'll see you in 10 years.